Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and my next guest is family therapist Michael Gurian, best known for his books about the development of boys, like The Wonder of Boys and The Minds of Boys. It's also written about girls, but those are his best-known books. In his new book, he goes after what he calls social trends parenting, and we will let him explain. The book is called Nurture the Nature, Understanding and Supporting Your Child's Unique Core Personality. It's published by Jossie Bass. And Dr. Gurian, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks so much.
What do you mean by social trends parenting?
This is a term that I developed to try to capture the sense that I think most of us as parents have, especially if we're into high-performing kids, that there's a new social trend coming at us every hour or two or every day or two regarding our children's self-esteem, regarding what tapes they should watch or listen to when they're young, how we should communicate with them. There's a lot of shoulds on these. Generally, when we know it's a trend that someone tells us we should do blank with our child. And I have two kids. My wife and I are both therapists, and we had to just sort of stop when our kids were, 4 and 5, and we just said, wait a minute, who are these kids, and what do these kids want, and how do we parse out in our minds which of these social trends actually are healthy for our children?
So let's pick a couple. One is that children should learn to read or do other cognitive tasks as young as possible. You single this out in your book. That's not a good thing?
Well, the trend, and this one's generally a trend regarding boys. There's a lot of fear among parents. I think these trends create fear. So if a boy doesn't, or any child, but again, generally, the male brain develops its reading skills later. Certain areas of the male brain develop the verbals later. So males can be a year, year and a half behind females. They're going to read, but there's so much pressure for kids to read when they're 4. Some people are, there was even someone who was saying, well, I can teach your child to read at 9 months, And this just hits parents, and then they think, well, my child is bad, is going to struggle, is going to suffer. I've got to get a tutor for my 4-year-old to read. We have a million kids right now under 6 who are taking antidepressants, and there are other similar statistics regarding our kids. This is not a healthy way to raise these kids. This child will learn to read at 5 or 6, and he will be a good reader, and because that's when his nature, his brain, reads. And there are many, many of these. That girls, if they struggle with some low self-esteem when they're 12 or 13, they will therefore not be able to run corporations. It's these sorts of things that are not true. Shyness does not mean you won't be able to run a corporation, but we get convinced that if you have a shy child, there's something wrong.
I'm glad you brought that one up. That was actually
this is what we're fighting against.
That was actually the next one from the book that I was going to single out, and we can take some phone calls for Dr. Michael Gurian on what you think might be the social trends, parenting pressures that you are falling prey to or might be confused about when you hear this is a good thing and maybe it goes against your gut or whatever, or some of you who are raising boys might want to call in with questions for Dr. Gurian, since that's his best-known specialty. But anyone, 212-433-WNYC, this can be about your kids, about your grandkids, about how your parents raised you, 212-433-WNYC. This myth, as you label it, that you talked about the shy children, that assertive and extroverted kids usually grow up to be the most successful adults. Where did that come from?
Well, I think it's this externally oriented approach to kids. I would argue, the argument I make in the book is from my best research, that these things probably started with the Industrial Revolution and the necessity of creating uniform approaches to children, because we had millions and millions of kids that we needed to educate and raise. So we created these external and uniform approaches, and it was not a far away leap to say, well, look, people who run corporations must be blank. They must be strong, assertive, you know, not shy, et cetera. That's kind of sort of the assumptions got made without people knowing about nature or personality or, you know, how personality is on the chromosomes or any of these things. And then the myth kept developing and kept developing. Of course, incredibly shy people, you know, run corporations, but we don't notice that. And so we just assume that you have to be a certain personality type. And then so then people worry if their child is not that personality type. Their child needs to play three sports, you know, that are competitive in order to become a CEO later. And I have two daughters, so this has been a big deal over the last my daughters are 17 and 14 in the girl world, you know, and I wrote The Wonder of Girls and we explored this there. In the girl world, you got to get those girls out doing blank, blank, and blank or they're not going to succeed. And a lot of this for boys and girls is just thrown on, I think, because we sort of decided the kid was a blank slate and we had to industrialize the kid, so we had to make the kid fit the society.
Your book is called Nurture the Nature, and from my reading of it, you're pretty much on the nature side of the nature versus nurture divide. You don't accept that kids start out largely as blank slates, but rather with innate tendencies. But how far do you go with this?
Yeah. Well, you know, this book, Nurture the Nature, could not have been written. I don't think I could have written it 10, 20 years ago before the genome was mapped. But I think now, I think it's already in the culture. I think that this book just provides a lot of practical tools for people, and people kind of get already that because of the mapping of the genome, that things like personality and temperament, these things are hardwired into us. And the role of nurture, what I argue is that the role of nurture, which is profound, right? You can't have a biological organism, a child, without his or her environment. But the role of nature, I hope, will be to nurture the nature. So not just to nurture some social trend, but to nurture the actual purpose and nature and temperament and personality of the child. So that's where I fall on it. I actually am no longer involved in the nurture versus nature debate because I accept that it's both, that they're interlocked. You can't have one without the other. So now for me, it's a matter of helping parents to get information from brain sciences and from the genome research and then practical tools from other parents, you know, that will help them nurture the nature, not do nurture versus nature.
Let's take a call. Here's Anne in Norwalk. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to tell you that. I wanted to completely agree with your guest. I mean, it's so ridiculous to see some of these kids at 3 and 4 years old being pushed into sports and music lessons and all of these, you know, crazy things because the parents think they need to do this to keep their child competitive. And I'm absolutely going to buy his book.
Dr. Gurian?
Oh, well, hey. Thank you. I think you've just said it in a nutshell, the relief that this philosophy gives parents, certainly gave my wife and I, and there are stories in the book. Every chapter has stories from other parents who are using this nurture the nature approach, you know, and what it gives is relief. And the core, I think the pivot point of the relief is not that now we don't have to put them in three sports or something like that. What it is that we see from success that other parents have had that if you identify the personality of this child and you teach toward that, that this child will succeed. So we're not giving up success. This is a different approach to success, and it causes less chronic stress, less use of, you know, antidepressants and other stimulant medications. It's an easier flow for the child and the family, and it still leads to the same success.
By the way, before we take another call, I want to reference something that came up on the show last hour. We were talking about those new compact fluorescent light bulbs, and it came up that women seem to mind them more than men. And I remembered reading in your book last night that there's a gender difference in how we process color, that girls and women actually tend to be more color sensitive than boys. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yes. The female brain, so that's girls and women, is hardwiring, comes before we're born. That brain system takes in more sensorial data in general. So to make that human, what we mean is, you know, touching things, soft things, touching them, getting stimulation from them, whether it's clothing or whatever it is, and the female brain hears more. And then with vision, also things like color. There are very few colorblind girls or women, you know, something like 95% are males, because the male brain is not set up as well to get these colors. And so, hence, sometimes certain colors and certain kinds of light can overstimulate the female brain, so the female visual cortex and so on, and not overstimulate the male.
This theory that marital tranquility is going to be zapped by this new compact fluorescent bulb because there's going to be conflict over whether the lighting is comfortable enough, I guess you think that's real.
No, I haven't looked at this, so I can't be an expert on that.
Arlene in Fairhaven, you're on WNYC with Michael Gurian. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I would like to say my husband and I fight about the light bulbs all the time, first of all. I'm hoping the author will address what I call sports abuse, the fact that boys have to not only play competitive sports, but play one in every season. And I see these kids go far into the night, risking injuries, practicing. To what end? I think it's usually a fantasy about, you know, the elusive sports college scholarship.
Yes, thank you so much. That is an amazing social trend, you know, social trend myth that if you got to get your boy into sports, and of course some of this bleeds over into girls too, got to get him into these sports. You ought to do one a season, maybe two. And some of the language is, well, generally it's you should, you know, always I beg people, when you hear should from someone, then that may, you know, may be an area of mythos now. But also it's that if you don't, they won't socialize well, they won't compete, and or they will become drug addicts or drunks, or in other words, they'll go down bad paths, you know, and there's this whole sort of mythos around these things. Now, obviously, sports and exercise can be great, but the key for the brain and the body is the exercise. It's not necessarily the sports. And if we have a child that likes sports, great. Then we'll follow his nature or her nature, and that child will go into a sport. But if we're compelling the child, or someone is compelling the child to do two or three of these sports, we've just got to take a pause for breath and make sure that the other parts of this child's life are working, and that we're not putting all our eggs in that basket. Because we want to remember that everyone listening, myself included, we're all going to know either ourselves or someone else who was male, who didn't play sports and succeeded quite well.
Yeah.
So there really is no causation. It's mythos.
Arlene, thank you a lot for your call. My guest is Michael Gurian, author of Nurture the Nature, Understanding and Supporting Your Child's Unique Core Personality. But I want to jump off on that answer, or from that answer, to your older work, The Wonder of Boys, and ask you how you think it's going. Because at that time, and you came on the show in the 90s when that book was new, you wrote about how boys really needed to have more physical activity than girls in general, and that a lot of classrooms and schools were set up with this, you know, kind of traditional model where everybody was expected to sit still, which is in general a lot easier for girls than it is for boys, and they needed to somehow, you know, allow boys to be boys in certain developmental respects. Do you think we've made much progress in that respect?
Well, I think, you know, I think we have. I mean, I'll say that like when The Wonder of Boys came out, that was sort of a new theme for the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 11 years later, came out in 96. Now, 11 years later, there are, of course, many other thinkers working in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the Gurian Institute, which is a training corporation that did not exist, you know, 11 years ago. And now, you know, 50 trainers are traveling everywhere, training schools in how to do this, how to create more kinesthetic and physical learning to help male brain. So, you know, I'm very optimistic. That piece of it is not necessarily about the overstimulation of three sports, right? I mean, the sports thing is like taking everything too far,
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't fit the nature of the child.
Mm-hmm.
The basic idea, though, is still the same. When we look at male brain and female brain, we're going to tend to find that we need that those guys are going to cry out for, especially in closed environments like classrooms, they're going to cry out for more physical activity. So these don't contradict.
Right. I'm just curious if you think that the education systems have made a lot of progress in that direction.
I think they. Oh, I definitely think the grassroots of education is moving. I'll tell you the place where I'm, where there's surprising resistance, and where I would beg the academics to get on board is in the schools of education that are training the teachers. Mm-hmm. They're still thinking 30 years ago that if you train teachers, if you show them the spec scans and the PET scans of how different the boys, girls, and the boys' brains and girls' brains are, that will create inequality for girls. They still think that way, and that is not true. We've proven for 10 years that we just create greater equality by showing teachers how to teach to boys and teach to girls. But the schools of education are slow to buy into that. They're in an older frame. And so I think that's where we need to really inspire and get more progress. But in the grassroots, in the school by school, they're really loving learning about how the male and the female have a different learning style.
Jessica in Glen Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I think that I live in a town that's very, very achievement-oriented, and I think part of the problem is that the adults have achieved so much and have pushed themselves so much, and so they judge their self-worth by how much they've achieved, and therefore push their children to do the same. And it is really insanity what you see. But I almost think that until grown-ups change how they self-image and how they judge their own value, it's going to be hard to get them to change how they push their kids.
You agree with that analysis, Dr. Gurian?
I think that's really wise. I have a long section in the book on purpose and life purpose, and I'm a high achieving parent myself, and so I've had to wrestle with this. I and many, many others who are featured have had to take that pause for breath and say, okay, we are high achievers, we're maybe type A's, we work really, really hard. What is it that helps us the most? What is it we're getting spiritually, physically, emotionally? I'm 49, for instance, right? So mm-hmm. At midlife, what is it I've done? Well, what I'm looking at is how I've achieved my purpose in life. And so when I transmit this high expectation that I have to my kids, I'm trying to refilter now, because now I don't push them into every activity like I used to 10 years ago. Now I'm refiltering it toward purpose. And so I'm asking of them, all right, which of these activities fits your purpose? Because at 49, when I look back, I can see all the waste of me doing 50 things. You know, the ones I settled on are the ones that build purpose for me and can provide me a sense that I'm creating a service in the world. So that's the dialogue I'm now having with my teens. And that purpose development, I think, can help us as adults filter our high expectations and target them with our kids. We're going to still have high expectations, but it targets them into a few activities rather than 50.
And I see that your book is divided largely into age groups, and that's really interesting about having these purpose discussions with your teenagers. Dave in Glen Rock, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking the call. The first thing I wanted to mention was that I think there's a trend among parents these days. I read an article about this a long time ago, even before I considered being a parent, the fear of letting your kids get bored.
And Dave, I'm going to leave it there because we're just about out of time. But this goes along with what the other caller was saying. And before you go, Dr. Gurian, yes, this fear of boredom that leads us to overschedule our children. But on the other hand, we hear about too much downtime in adolescence being dangerous, you know, how 3 to 6 p.m. is known as prime time for crime and all of that stuff. Give us 30 seconds.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, developmentally, you talked about the book being divided up. People will find in there that I'm calling developmentally for us to let our kids be bored a lot more early in life so that they develop their own neural abilities to be self-motivated. Then, when they're teenagers, what we find is that they know how to find the activities that help them. A lot of the boredom in the adolescent years that we're so scared of comes because we overstimulate them so much in the early years, they don't know how to be self-motivated when they start individuating and becoming individuals.
Dr. Michael Gurian, his latest book is Nurture the Nature, Understanding and Supporting Your Child's Unique Core Personality, published by Jossie Bass. Thanks very much. You've connected with a lot of listeners here today.
Thanks so much, Brian.